When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Previously on the Simply Human podcast.
And the private doctor that I was seeing who first gave me the diagnosis wanted to put me on the most aggressive chemotherapy regimen that there ever existed. And I didn't understand that. But later on, as I found out about the various treatment plans, options, he wanted to put me on the strongest simply because he could refer me to his infusion center that he owned. And he would be able to partake in the revenue reimbursement for putting me through that type of regimen.
It's episode 223 of the Simply Human Podcast with your hosts, Mark and Rick. Two human beings being human. Our goal is to help you understand how humans are designed to eat, sleep, move, and enjoy, and how you can start living more like a human today. On today's show, it is Tara Youngblood. She is a fusion scientist who specializes in the science of sleep. She's the co-founder of the Chili Pad, which is trademark. It is a secret weapon that past presidents, first ladies, and celebrities use up to their own... celebrities use to up their own sleep game.
Oh, my sleep game. There's so many people talking about my sleep game.
Speaking of past presidents, Rick, can you? How many of the 45 presidents can you name?
I definitely can't name all of them. I would have to go in order, but I would have to go backwards.
Okay. See how far back you can go. 45.
Are we really going to do this?
Yeah, it won't take long.
Okay. Well, yeah, it won't take me long because I'll run out of steam like when we get to like Eisenhower. So,
And no commentary, please. I'll have to edit it out. Just say the dadgum name and move on.
We got Trump.
Okay, 40. We got Obama. Okay, 44, 43.
George W. Bush. The W stands for.
I said, no commentary. I'm going to edit that out.
Clinton.
That's 42, George, 41.
George H. W. Bush.
No commentary.
Reagan.
Hold on. That's 40.
Yes. He was the president when I was born. Actually, no. Yeah, he was inaugurated right before I was born, a few weeks before. Jimmy Carter.
It's 39, 38.
Or Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford died today.
He was eaten by a bear.
You don't know that, then can't be friends.
It's so funny.
So,
okay,
Gerald Ford,
37.
Nixon,
very good, 36.
Let's see. Right before him. Oh, Lyndon B. Johnson.
Very good. I was going to say, you drive on the road.
I'm having to go forward and also back.
Yeah, 30, 35 is easy.
Okay, so, Kennedy.
Right, 34.
Kennedy was Eisenhower.
Very
right?
good, 33. Yeah.
Before Eisenhower, I want to say Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Close.
I think I'm in order.
There's one in between. They made a movie about him, and Jim Carrey was in it.
Oh, Andy Kaufman.
Harry Truman. Isn't that what the Truman Show is about, Harry Truman?
I get Truman and FDR backwards, yeah. Like went first, who went second. Yeah. So Truman,
well, I remember it because FDR died and then Truman had to make the decision.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so that's a good way to... Yeah. Okay, and then before FDR was Coolidge?
Coolidge was 30. 31.
This is where I completely...
Woodrow Wilson was 31.
Okay.
And then Calvin Coolidge was 30.
And Hoover was before Wilson. Herbert Hoover. Because Hoovervilles, right? Am I in the right...
Wait a second.
Look this up.
Hold on. I don't...
This is the least entertaining crosstalk.
I bet people are into it, though. No. I was wrong. No, I said Woodrow Wilson... I was getting the alliteration mixed up. Woodrow Wilson was 20, was in the late 20s. Herbert Hoover was 31. And then Calvin Coolidge was 30. Yeah. William McKinley is 29. Woodrow Wilson was 28.
I got Hoover, and when I got to Coolidge, I got Hoover and Coolidge back. And then before Coolidge, I'm completely...
Into the 20s,
I'm well out of it.
I know them all. And if you don't believe me, you can look at my Instagram, bragging montage. But
it's not the smartest thing I've ever heard.
I need to refresh.
I know all the presidents in order.
Rick, dime algo bueno.
Well, not sick yet. Still getting paid.
I said, tell me something good. Tell me something good.
Dígame algo bueno. Dígame.
Dime is D-I-M-E.
No.
Is what I learned.
I'm
going with my lessons here.
Okay, well, that's grammatically speaking, that's correct. Conversationally, that's not what you would say. You'd say dígame. Tell me something.
Give me is dame.
Diga is, well, it's kind of hard to, like, grammatically speaking, you're correct, but like not conversationally. That's not what people would say in a conversation.
Hold on, I just made some tea. And
this is the worst crosstalk ever.
Okay, I have a story. I have a good story.
In Spanish, Mark is talking about tea.
I have un té.
This is what like quarantine, I have no adventures to talk about.
Right. I do have a kind of a funny story that I did not tell you about because I wanted to save it. So as we have talked about on the show, my wife and I have a nonprofit.
My wife.
What?
Borat. My wife.
My wife and I have a nonprofit for moms called World's Okayest Mom. It's kind of a Facebook thing. There's more than 50,000 people, women, moms now in this group.
I'm going to join.
My
odds are good.
Do I need to delete that? hang on.
You don't have to delete that. Gosh, you're such a baby.
I know. Okay, so we this is part of the backstory. This is not bragging montage talk. We raise money from women that donate to us and men donate to us, and then we like put together care packages and send to moms all over the country. Okay, we're like 3 months behind on giving our care packages out, so we got a bunch of them. So we had to buy, and like normally we go to the store and buy like gift cards and buy this and that and all these little things. Well, can't do that. So Jen made quite a sizable Amazon purchase of gift cards, which I guess it was over a threshold that it was like it flagged something within the internal Amazon system. And I got a phone call from a Seattle, Washington number. Okay. I did not associate it with Amazon. So I was a telemarketer or some credit card thing or something. So I just ignored it.
Briefly, am I the only person left in America that when my phone rings, even if I don't recognize the number, I answer?
Probably.
Am I the last person that does that?
You're the last person.
I think I am. I'm always afraid if it's going to be something like, oh, yes, your second great uncle, eight times removed, was a trillionaire and he died. And it's the last time we were going to try to call you. That's what I literally think about the number I don't recognize. That's
and you can always just, and if it's someone you don't want to talk to, you just hang up. You just...
Oh yeah, it always is.
Yeah.
It's always someone telling me about my car warranty or like some message in Chinese.
Right,
I'm getting a lot of those. I'm sorry. Continue. Okay. So you get a Seattle number.
So and I get it like, five or six times the Seattle, Washington number, and I'm out in the garage with my daughters. This is like on I don't know Wednesday or something, and this number rings, and I like actively decline it, and it immediately rings back. I thought of like whenever we like what rapid fired my dad on the prank call, you know. It's like, so I was like, and my daughters are out there, and I was like, okay, I'm answering this, and I'm gonna mess with this credit card person, whoever this is, trying to call me and tell me that I'm gonna be sued or something, you know.
Okay.
So I answer the phone in kind of like a this kind of voice. It was kind of a
hello.
Like kind of.
I will do that. I will do that sometimes, okay, too, but I'll do it in Spanish.
So I do it in this voice, and the voice. Listen, you got to believe me on this one. The voice back was a very similar voice. I did the voice first.
And they did it back.
I was not mocking the voice, right? It wasn't like I said, yo, and they were like,
hello.
And then I was like,
oh, hello.
Like, I did the voice, and then it just happened to be what this person sounded like.
Maybe they were mocking you.
I'm hoping that's what it was.
That would be really funny.
Hello?
Like,
oh, yes, hello.
is Mark Rogers there? Sure. And the girls are sitting there listening to me, and I say, and I've got it on speakerphone, you know, and I go,
Mark Rogers died this morning.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, how did this happen? And as is my custom, when I do this kind of thing and somebody asks what happened, I say he was squished. And that's I just leave it at that. He was squished. And the guy, like, you could tell, like, this is not in his tree of possible things that they might say, and then you say this, you know? So he was obviously very, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry, this is not a good time. Hi. And I was like, yes, this is a very tragic time and all this stuff. And the girls are dying laughing and all this stuff. And then he was like, well, this is like such and such from Amazon. And I was calling about this gift card order. I guess I'll just go ahead and cancel this order. And I was like, oh, crap.
See if we can put him in his casket.
Yeah. But then I'm like, no, I don't want you to cancel the order. This is a big order. We need all this stuff. Don't cancel the order. So then I was like, well, his wife made the order, maybe she, but it's my name on the account, so she can't verify it. I have to verify it.
Way to go, idiot.
I know. So I was like, dang it. So I like broke into normal voice, and I was like, hey.
Sorry, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I was like, could I be completely honest with you here? I was like, this is Mark.
You, at this point, you have no choice.
Right,
but to come
right.
Listen, this is a completely failed bit. I'm sorry, I thought you were a telemarketer.
Exactly. It's exactly what idiot. I said. I was like, I've been getting these calls, and I've been sick of it. I didn't. If I knew it was from Amazon, I obviously would have answered and wouldn't have done that. I'm really sorry. I hope maybe that was a funny thing that happened to you today that you can tell your friends about or something. And he was just like,
lots of people, many people, okay, like, complete jackass, they mocked me, my voice and phone.
Right. And then I was like, I wanted to be like, for the record, I spoke first. I was not making fun of your voice, sir. So like he could have just gone in and just like deleted my account from Amazon, you know, like, or just like
had a fight,
charged me for, they've got my credit card information. They could just charge me for, you know, all the things that Jack sends us for our birthday. So I felt really stupid. Of course, the girls thought that was just the funniest thing ever that I got, like, not in trouble, but like had to, like, you know, my joke didn't work, you know, they're still talking about it. So that's
way
my story. I'm sticking to it.
I've got a funny story.
Okay. We have 6 minutes.
I just spent the weekend watching television.
what'd you watch, Rick?
Well, I've moved. This is how sad this has gotten. I have now watched all of the entertaining shows that there are to watch.
I don't know about that.
And I am moving into World War II documentaries. Would you like to know why I picked specifically World War II documentaries?
Is it the Kent Burns ones?
Well,
Kent Burns.
Here's the reason. Because there's a billion of them, like 100,000 hours worth of documentaries and books. So I'm not going to run out.
Right. I do enjoy the World War II.
I can watch because, you know, when I was in school, I didn't pay any attention at all whatsoever to any of it. You know, Hitler's bad guy. Germany was doing some stuff.
Right. Nazis.
I literally knew no details beyond Hitler bad, everybody else good. We won.
Yeah.
like and some key words like Maginot. Like I've heard that, but I didn't know what it was. The Maginot line, this gigantic, super fortified defensive perimeter that France set up that Germany like blew through in about 10 seconds.
Wait, I thought Maginot was the pizza. Oh, that's Maggiano's. Okay, I'm sorry.
Are you done?
Sorry. World War II.
But that's why I settled on watching World War II documentaries, because I was like, well, I'm not going to run out of these,
it's
I
infinite.
Guess. I'm able to watch these from now until the day I die.
It's pretty interesting. World War II is a pretty little interesting little rabbit hole to go down into. Have you seen...
I also knew about Pearl Harbor, that was a thing.
Yes. The necklace.
The what?
The necklace. The type of necklace.
No. It's not called a Pearl Harbor.
No, I just meant that's a pearl thing.
Stop. You have derailed.
I didn't mean that to be inappropriate. I was just making a...
Oh yeah, yeah. You joke. Definitely didn't mean to be inappropriate.
I didn't even intend that. Should I delete that? I didn't even intend that.
Quit deleting everything when you make a fool out of yourself. Just leave it on them.
It's like, and it's episode, and that's gonna do it for this edition. If I edit out all of me making a fool of myself. Have you seen 1917?
No, because I'm waiting for it to come to streaming. That one in Dunkirk.
I streamed
sure
it.
I
rented it for like $5.
Oh, well, Mr. $5 movie rental.
It's a pretty good little movie, Rick. You should watch it. It's very tense.
That's World War I.
Right. My kids and I watched three movies over the weekend.
Okay.
I want you to, from a parent perspective, scale of 1 to 10, 0, not a great movie to waste their time watching, 10, they have to watch it at some point.
Okay.
Napoleon Dynamite.
At some point, yes.
So that's a good one.
Are we talking about like age, like at some point in their life they have to watch it, or like right now?
Yeah, just at some point. This is like a classic that they, like us watching Airplane or something.
I wonder if like that ages well. I wonder if kids think that's funny.
My older one, I
laughed hysterically through the whole thing when I saw it in the movie theater. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, eh.
Yeah, the Bow to Your Sensei scene.
It's a good one-time viewing.
Yeah, Bow to Your Sensei. Rex Kwon Do. And then we watched...
I'm giving it a 7.
Okay. Then we watched, and I had never seen this one, Indiana Jones and the something something of the Crystal Skull, that newer one that came out.
Something something. Oh, okay.
The Crystal Skull one.
With Shia LaBeouf.
Yes.
I have not seen this.
Hadn't seen it.
I have a hot Indiana Jones opinion.
Wasn't my favorite.
There's only one good Indiana Jones movie, and it's the first one.
The Last Crusade's pretty good.
With Sean Connery.
Not
even remotely close to being as good as the first one.
That's the other one we watched, was The Last Crusade.
Falling off. Oh my gosh. The Temple of Doom is terrible.
Yeah, Temple of Doom is pretty bad. But we watched The Last Crusade. That was the third one we watched.
I should watch that one again. Okay.
And then we're going to go back and watch.
You said three Raider. Movies.
That was it. Napoleon Dynamite and then the two Indiana Jones movies. And they've seen all the Rockies.
I tried to get my kids to watch Rocky One, and they're like, "This is boring."
Yeah, Rocky One is really artistic. It's very slow. There's a lot of story.
Well, I wouldn't even say it's artistic. It's a very like plot driven movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About a bunch of complex stuff that stupid idiot kids don't understand.
Right.
Watched Rocky Man. IV for 75th time.
Oh, so good.
Last weekend, and gotta say, there's a lot of plot holes in this movie. You know, you're talking about like the mid late 80s, height of the Cold War. So they're just going to let Ivan Drago, a Russian army
veteran
officer, just fly over to the United States and be like, "Yeah, I want a box." Yeah. Okay, we'll just catch the next plane from Moscow to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Like that, like you can do that. And then Apollo Creed's like, "Oh, somebody got to fight this Russian? Sure, I'll do it with no training whatsoever, period. I'm in my swimming pool on Thursday. I'm in the press conference on Friday. They did this fight so quick. How is James Brown able to come up with this like crazy
song?
Living in America. The whole nine yards in like 3 days. They have like the big giant, like all the decorations just sitting in a closet at Caesar's Palace.
The stage with the hydraulics.
Yes, the whole nine yards. Yeah. It would have taken months and months. And furthermore, in Rocky III, the emphasis was Apollo Creed teaching Rocky, like, you can't underestimate your opponent. You have to train and train hard. And then, like, the next movie, yeah, he's just like, sure, I'll jump out of the swimming pool and fight this giant Russian machine.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's by far the Rocky movie I've seen the most, because I've seen it seriously at least 75 times, most of the time when I was a kid. And none of this dawned on me when I was a kid. Right. I just thought it was cool.
Well, that was happening to me during Last Crusade. I was like, oh, please. Like, yeah. I never did that when I was a kid. And my 10-year-old is going, Dad, it's a movie. Like, relax.
Bend your disbelief, Dad.
Yeah. Okay, it is 8:31. Let's switch over to the Terra call. And then we'll just come back to this call when we're done. Okay.
There
you are. Hello. And we're just going to do, we do audio only. So if you want to leave your video on, that is fine with us, but you don't have to.
No, I just turned it on for a minute in case sometimes people want to have it on the beginning, but that usually works better just sound quality-wise.
Right, right. That's why we do it. Yeah, it sounds coming through good.
Okay, great.
Okay, we were just talking about, we've already done your intro. We're recording. We've already done, like, the intro and stuff. We were talking about, like, movies that we've obviously got some extra time on our hands. Have you watched any movies lately, like older movies that you watched when you were a kid and you rewatched recently?
Oh, I have not. I need to do that. I've done that over the period of years. Like, things will pop up, like, the kids hadn't heard of Back to the Future. So you're like, oh my God, like, that's criminal. But so then we're like, have to immediately sit down and watch them. So most of the time for me, it pops up when there's some like reference to something like that. And you're like, oh, you can't not know what that means. You have to understand what that means.
Right. Yeah. Rick is my co-host. Rick, this is Rick.
Hi, Tara. Thank you.
Hello.
Back to the Future is one that my oldest daughter is in fifth grade, and she's like, we were just talking about, like, watching all the Rockies and, like, Indiana Jones and those movies, and Back to the Future, she loved it, and we can't watch the second one until my other daughter watches the first one, and so she's like, Dad, watch that one with Hope, so we can watch the second one. Like, it's so good stuff. But anyway, all right, Rick, let's guess her birthday. Would you please?
Okay, so Tara, this is a thing that we do. It doesn't really make any sense. We can't really remember when or why we started doing it. But Mark and I each get two guesses for your birth month and day. We're not guessing year. I'm the only, just so I can remind everyone.
Okay, you do this every week.
I'm the only one who's ever done it correctly. So I am in the lead, 1-0 all time. We've been doing this for like 4 years. All you can say, don't say if we're close, just say yes or no.
I was within a week last week. I guessed within 6 days.
I guessed it on the number.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I got this.
I'll let you go first.
So it's not a hint, but I will say that my mother guessed my birth date, and she won all of the baby furniture at a Sears Roebuck Festival.
That
so it's a lucky birthday. So maybe you can guess it.
Okay, Mark, go ahead.
December 15th.
No.
March 17th.
No.
All right. Wait, is that it? Or are we doing another one? We're doing another one.
We have two guesses. We can't do it for just one guess.
Right. Like, that's ridiculous. Two guesses is so much better odds. Yeah. I guessed in October last week it was close. Well, so the chances are that's not October. I'm gonna go February 20th.
No.
I like how I just, when you said February 20th, I went, like, that was
nice. Yeah.
Like, there's any sign of this. April 20th.
No, but that's my son's birthday, so that has to count for something.
Okay, well, I am now in the lead of 1.5.
No, that doesn't count. Okay, when is your birthday, Tara?
My birthday is Halloween.
Dang it. October. Dang it.
I know. I thought you were going to go October there for a minute, but...
That's what we should just do, holidays.
Just only guess holidays.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So, Tara, we are excited to have you on. Anytime we can have a fusion scientist on the show, that's exciting. So, will you just kind of give – we already sort of said what you do, and that we talked about the chili pad a little bit. But sort of in your own words, like, tell us your story.
Oh, okay. So I for those of you that want to have a more in-depth version, I did just do a TEDx talk in December.
Oh, so cool.
You can get all the juicy details in there probably. But fusion scientist is someone that is the opposite of sort of the nuclear physics of today, where you fission, where you pull things apart. Fusion is what the sun does and it puts it together. So it's really all about energy. Unfortunately, fusion science isn't really big in the US, so I had to go to sleep and check out sleep energy instead. The long and short of it is I've never been a very good sleeper. And so I desperately wanted to find a solution for why I couldn't sleep and how to hack this whole sleep thing. And Todd and I had, Todd, husband and business partner.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, who's Todd? Who's Todd? Yeah.
No, we met on the first day of college and kind of been stuck together ever since. He was going to be an engineer at first, but he only lasted 3 days. Went into business.
I was going to ask if he switched to the caboose. I mean, if he was going to be an engineer and if he decided the other.
No, it probably would have been a good choice as well. Anything that meant he didn't have to go to a class for as long and study as hard, I think he was up for that. But we invented the chili pad. We've actually brought over 100 different products to market, more than that. I don't know what the running count is. So we're kind of serial entrepreneurs. But his uncle invented the waterbed. And so.
Oh, what?
I know. Crazy. Charles P. Hall. You can Google him. He's quite a trip.
I will. Hold on. This is great. I already found your TEDx talk and I already put the link in the show notes. So what did you say? Charles what?
Charles P. Hall, he invented it as part of his master's thesis in University of San Francisco in the height of the hippie era.
The first thing that pops up is the waterbed's inventor is still groovy after all these years.
He would absolutely say he's still groovy. Yes, he is absolutely awesome. All about that. It started with Jell-O, sort of all the inventor stories you can come up with, but...
He was just trying to sleep on a mattress made out of Jell-O, and it just wasn't working. And then he was like, "Wait a second!
It was a chair. It was a chair of Jell-O, and it was really messy. As you can imagine, the nastiness of a Jell-O chair going bad.
Oh, right. That's fascinating. And then the rest of the time, they just talked about waterbeds and Jell-O.
Yes, because you can spend a lot of time there. In fact, you can do a whole loop, and people describe fusion as holding Jell-O with elastic bands. So you can kind of do a whole trippy little loop there.
Jell-O but, talk.
We can just turn it into talk about Jell-O. Yeah. So years later, lots of years later, Todd and I see Select Comfort and Personalized Comfort, microclimate seats, and we both sleep at different temperatures. So we thought it would be a good idea to put dual temperature control in a bed. So that's where the birth of the chili pad came from.
Yeah.
And then of course I had to figure out, because it was working kind of amazingly for a lot of people, and it still hadn't fixed my sleep. So I had to figure out all the other parts of the recipe. So that's where I've kind of gotten to today.
So, all right, give us now the four pillars of the semi-human lifestyle: eat, sleep, move, and manage stress / enjoy life in ways humans were designed. What is in kind of a Cliff's Notes version, what is sleep? Like, you know, my listeners hear us talk about it, but I want to hear it from your words. Like, you know, what is sleep? I'm going to just let it go from there.
So I feel like the best describing thing for sleep is to compare ourselves to a computer or a phone or a piece of electronics that's gone wonky and isn't doing what you want it to do. It gets overstressed out. You have to turn it off and reset it and restart and give it a fresh start so that it can work again. And I feel like sleep is that for humans. It's where we recover. It's where we switch out our stress and our healthy recovery hormones, growth hormones. We actually, shortly after deep sleep, your brain will actually get washed. Your spinal fluid washes the toxins out. They actually attribute that now to when you don't get good deep sleep. That's one of the causes of Alzheimer's. It's the tau protein builds up because it doesn't get washed away. So sleep is, you know, the number of things that sleep does is almost infinite in the places that it touches. It has bi-directional connections with almost everything. Certainly all of your mental illnesses, depression, anxiety are all bi-directional. Immunity is bi-directional. So there's so many things that sleep touches on, but it's a chance for us to to restart and refresh and get to heal.
Right. And let's very quickly talk about kind of the design of sleep, as if, you know, sort of naturally the lights go down very slowly and the colors change, and then, right, it's darkness, right? And now we've got all these artificial lights. Kind of talk about some of the things that you do maybe in your home or telling people, okay, implement X into your kind of your night light equation. What do you tell people to do at night?
Yeah, so I'm gonna back up just a hair on that scenario, because some really interesting research into what is a sleep switch and what is a trigger. Clifford Sapir out of Harvard was the first person to coin what is called a sleep switch. It's there are certain neurons in your brain, VLPO neurons, that are triggered. They're actually triggered by temperature, those particular ones, but there's other sets that will be triggered by light. And different humans are triggered by light better than temperature, and some will be triggered by temperature better than others. There's a bunch of hunter-gatherer studies that will attribute it very heavily to temperature. Jerry Siegel out of UCLA did one. There's a couple others, but there's a bunch of those that attribute it to that. So the biggest thing to start with sleep, though, is understanding when that trigger is ready to be pulled. So it has to be, your body has to be ready for that switch to be able to be flipped. And the important thing for that is to talk about something called your circadian rhythm, your body clock. It's your chronotype. So we're all a little bit different, and there's a whole spectrum of different times in which people will go to sleep. That's their ideal bedtime. And so part of the magic of falling asleep is knowing your chronotype, which means if you're a morning person, that might have been one of the ways you've heard about it, or a night person. As an evening person, you're going to go to bed much later. As a morning person, obviously, you're going to go to bed earlier. That can be as early as like even 8 or 9 or 9 or 10. And then that window, your body is looking for those cues, light, temperature. They're looking for a change in that. So that's where dimming the lights or not having blue light go right to bedtime, because there's no change in light then. We're looking for a change in something. That's what's being registered and triggered in your brain. Your body's looking for the temperature to drop, like it would be outside as the sun's gone down. And of course, our houses are all pretty consistent temperatures day and night, even all year round. So what we have to do is we have to remember that our body has evolved over time. It's only very recently that we have this whole climate control thing and light control, so that we didn't have to go to sleep when it started to get dark and dim and when it was colder during the night than during the day. So it's really important to think about that. We want to register that change in our body. And if we do it at the right time, that's what cues the release of melatonin. A lot of people will take melatonin, but your body will release it when it's cued to do that. And it is those neurons being triggered that will do that.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I feel like I read this somewhere, but it would be good to have it verified. Like sometimes I will tell people, I'll say, no, look, I'm not really sure about this, but the way I understand it is, if you just take a bunch of melatonin, like some pills, but your body's not ready to uptake the melatonin, it's doing nothing. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, it is a lot about the timing of that melatonin. You know, there's different doses as well. I don't know, there isn't great research on a long-term thing. A lot of parents give them to kids, those melatonin gummies, but you know, you're replacing a hormone and it's relatively harmless from what they can tell, but studies don't go on for 20 years on those things. And, you know, anytime you're replacing a hormone, I feel like there's some risk. And so the bias is, if you can just change your temperature, take a long walk before you go to bed, or take a warm bath or a shower. I curl up under my weighted blanket because it's warm, because I want to warm up to sleep. Todd likes to be cold to sleep, hence our different temperatures. So it doesn't matter what that is, but you really need to trigger it with a change, or you need to, if your light is more sensitive to you, then you want to start dimming those lights. Put on blue light glasses in the evening, try to dim your lights. You don't need to have as many lights on as we do. It doesn't need to be blaring daylight at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. It can be a little more dim than it was during the day, and that'll also help cue your body.
Talk about weighted blankets. My daughters both have weighted blankets. It seems to help. There's good, there's good science behind that. Or part of that is like, who cares what the science is? If you sleep better with it, then use it.
I am all about that. If, you know, there's so much science out there that seems to say that you need to sleep a particular way, and we're all different, just like everything else about us, that our hair color isn't all the same, our eyes aren't all the same, our bodies aren't all the same. Right. We're not going to all sleep the same. So there is a big part of whatever helps you sleep works, but there is really good science behind weighted blankets and getting ready for sleep. And when you are under a weighted blanket, the deep pressure can help release serotonin, which again is one of those hormones that you want to have some when you go to sleep, because it helps you fall asleep and helps with the regulation of that sleep-wake cycle. So it's really, really healthy thing to do, especially if you feel anxious or stressed as you're going to go to sleep, or if you have any sort of history of depression or anxiety. Weighted blankets can be really awesome that way.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot here. I don't know what your kind of being cold in general, I don't know, is maybe out of your area of expertise, but I feel like, because you mentioned it's just until recently we've had this climate control option. And I feel like with little kids, like, you know, because I have three children, and when they're really little, and like the water's like really cold, like to go swimming, for instance, the water's freezing, they just jump right in and they don't even, it's like we get trained to not ever be exposed to like cold water, cold temperature. But like, is that something that's kind of like driven into us, where we're supposed to be exposed to like colder temperatures sometimes?
Actually, I think it's most to do with the fact that we think we want to be comfortable all the time.
Right.
And there's a lot of this research, even for kids, you know, we pad playgrounds to the point now where no one will ever break their arm. And
right.
There's a lot of research that's starting to show that that may not be the best. Not that we want kids getting hurt, but a little bit of getting hurt, scraping your knee, is actually healthy for you.
Right.
So putting padding around them, making everything comfortable. I mean, that's part of why we don't want the change in the evening. If it starts to cool down, we're supposed to put on a sweater,
right,
like we would be outside, you know? So
right.
We feel like we want to be comfortable all the time, but actually our homeostasis isn't driven by comfort. It's driven by maintaining, you know, that homeostasis
right.
in the change and understanding how to regulate based on change.
Yeah, so homeostasis doesn't exist without variation. Like, you've got to have the variation for homeostasis to like kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My 6-year-old son is learning how to ride without a training wheels like this week, you know. And so this is the perfect, like, we could have a whole discussion on like why sometimes being uncomfortable and sometimes pain is good. And he's like, what if I fall? And I'm like, if you fall, it's okay. You know, then I'm also trying to let go of the dadgum bike, you know, like if he falls, it's going to be okay. Like, it's a good, you know, but I want to, like, there's that balance between, I don't want him to get hurt, you know, but he needs to get hurt. Like, like every time you fall, every time you get hurt, you're learning something. That's information, you know? So, the balance that you've got to, keep when you're a parent. But
yes, it's very hard. The it only gets worse. I have teenagers.
Right. Oh, gosh.
The tough love there is much harder.
Oh, I'm not looking forward to that. You mentioned,
I think that's why you get there slowly.
Right.
Very,
yes.
Very slowly.
That's the design. Right. Yeah. No one adopts an 18-year-old, right?
No, no, they wouldn't do that on purpose, I don't think.
Right. You mentioned like some people go to bed early and like being anxious before you go to sleep. I know there's a lot of people that I work with or that have talked to that will wake up in the middle of the night and they get really frustrated about that. And then they get so frustrated about it, they can't go back to sleep. Done a lot of reading on the whole idea of this biphasic sleeping, where, you know, back before electric lights, artificial lights, you know, people would go to bed when it got dark and they got tired. They would wake up in the middle of the night and get up and just, they're not flipping lights on and disrupting their sleep cycles. They might, you know, do an hour or two of work, read by candlelight or something, and fall back asleep. They're still getting the full amount of sleep that they need, but it was in like two different phases. And so is that something that you have read about or know anything about, this whole biphasic sleeping thing?
Yes. So first of all, I'll have a different answer for getting up in the middle of the night, but biphasic sleep was really how it was done for a long time. Charles Dickens even has reference to first and second sleep.
Right.
So there is a good historical record for that. You know, the evidence, I'm trying to remember the name of the author right now, but Wild at Nights is the name of the book. And, you know, he in there talks about the fact that 8 hours was kind of negotiated so factory workers wouldn't work all the time. They had to have some time for sleep. So they had 1 8-hour segment, and that's where the start of 8 hours came from. So there's, you know, a lot of reference that this whole 8 hours that we've said everyone needs to sleep the exact same way for 8 hours in order to achieve this optimal 100% sleep thing is really a big myth. And so, you know, I think there's a bunch of that where if you do it the right way and you're really thinking about it and you're getting enough rest, however you sleep is the right way. So Todd is definitely a night owl. It works out really well because we have an office in China. And so he's up and able to work when they're getting open. So it works out beautifully, but he's, you know, just doesn't sleep as long at night, but he's a great napper. He can nap like in a heartbeat and he can have a power nap. I'm much more of a morning person and that is terrible for me. I can't do naps very well. So it's not to say naps are bad. It just means it doesn't work as well for me, but it works great for him. And I think that's the tricky part about biphasic sleep is if you're going to start down that path, do it, but do it like a scientist would and sort of experiment to see what works the best for your body. Have a sense on when what's happening in your circadian rhythm and what your chronotype is. So you have a sense on when there is two dips during the day where you can possibly hit deep sleep a little easier. One's in the middle of the night and the other one's right after lunch. So some people will split it up that way and they're still able to get their deep sleep. You know, the biggest factor is having that balance between deep sleep and REM sleep. And that kind of brings me back around to that 3 o'clock wake up. So one of the reasons why people wake up in the middle of the night really has to do a lot with that temperature, because right around 3 o'clock at night, somewhere between 2 and 4 for most people, your body wants to be at its coldest spot. So you're dropping 2 degrees in core body temperature during that time to get to there. And at that point, you're mostly, when people are waking up, they're actually hot. So your body actually doesn't want to wake up then if you're in real sleep. But if you're too hot, you'll wake up. And that doesn't mean you're hot like you're dripping in sweat, like night sweats, which does still happen to people. But even if you're just too warm, you will wake up because you're not in deep sleep.
I think everybody's probably been awakened in the middle of the night and just been like, oh, and like taking off the sweater that they had on or like taking off their socks and like, oh, I'm so hot. Like, I think that's probably a universal thing.
Yeah. And honestly, that was what I was doing wrong for a long time, because I like to go to sleep really warm. And so I would curl up because I just feel cold when I'm about to go to sleep and yet wake up in the middle of the night hot. So, you know, that's one of the things I had to figure out was that balance. But you really do want to be as cold as possible. And beds these days have got foam in them, which are reflecting back heat at that point. So we've kind of created this tsunami of heat that is happening at that time, because about 4 hours into a foam mattress, it's absorbed all the heat it can. So it'll start reflecting it back at you. And you figure blankets and all those sort of things too, you know, especially if there's two humans in the bed, you're both little engines putting off heat. It gets warm when your body wants to be cold, because it's expecting it to be pretty cold outside.
Let's talk about dreams. If you are dreaming, is that an REM sleep phase thing? Is that a good sign? Does it matter?
It doesn't really matter that much. They actually have found that dreams happen all the time, like in deep sleep, light sleep, and REM sleep. Really? It does seem like the type of dreams change throughout, like what you're dreaming about, what you're trying to solve. It does seem that it's part of almost the memory reconciliation. I have an analogy I've built in my head of, you know, your memories that you accumulate during the day kind of all get piled up. They actually don't get filed during the day. They all get put in your hypothalamus and in this holding pattern. And over the period of 2 weeks, they go from short-term memory to long-term memory, but your brain has to decide and kind of go through it. And if you imagine being at your desk sorting files that have built up over 2 weeks, every time you open a file, you're going to have to reimmerse yourself just a little bit and say, okay, is this something I need to keep, or is this something I can throw away? Is this something I need that's going to be valuable to me, or can I get what I need to out of it and then it's gone? And so there's sort of a process like that that happens, and dreams are kind of part of that process, I believe. It does seem like there's some evidence towards that. The hardest part about dreams, of course, is getting them recorded at the time of the event to try to get a glimpse into what they are and what they're doing. And that's kind of been tricky. They've made some headway into that as far as being able to sort of visualize what's happening in dreams a little better. There's some really cool technology. I was at a conference at MIT and they were showing off some of that. So I think there will be a future where we can watch video reels of what people are dreaming
about. That's terrible.
Probably 5-10 years out, but that would be kind of neat.
I have some of the craziest dreams you could possibly imagine, and I'll tell people about them and they're like,
you're weird.
Yeah. You're having, and I have really vivid dreams, but also like another weird thing is like, does anybody else have this? Where like you are trying to remember a dream, and the harder you try to think about it,
the more it goes away.
The more distant it gets in your brain.
Yeah, that's crazy. That happens. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, there's lots of interesting things that happen. I think one of my favorite sort of sleep geek factoids is when you first fall asleep, there's something called hypergogic sleep. And Thomas Edison, Vincent Van Gogh, so many sort of those famous inventor creator types would do this technique. Thomas Edison made it famous by taking naps. And if you Google it, you can pull them up online. But he's holding two steel balls in his hands, and he would have a problem that he wanted to solve. And so he would hold the steel balls, and the moment he fell asleep for real, and as you move through sleep, we've all kind of felt it, especially, you know, on a plane where your head nods, so your body starts to relax. And when you've done that, you've moved from hypergogic into a light sleep. And so when the steel balls hit the floor, he would wake up. And the process of thinking about a problem, going through hypergogic sleep, and then waking up is pretty amazing, because in that state of sleep, they've found that the rules that our consciousness holds about what's possible is eliminated. And so if you think about it in terms of science, that, you know, kind of like a matrix, if you're a sci-fi geek, but in that state where the rules are gone and you could possibly jump from building to building, that's what happens in that kind of sleep. And you can solve problems that your conscious mind wouldn't let you solve.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different topics here that we could just expand on. So we're coming up on time. There's a couple things we want to ask you, but first, what are like the, I don't know, do you have like a 3 or 4 bulleted list of like, okay, you're having bad sleep, I don't have a whole lot of time to work with you, do these X number of things and call me in the morning kind of deal?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it goes back to that chronotype. Find your chronotype. Know when you should go to sleep. Use our tips of like changing temperature or light to figure out which one of those.
Right.
But I think the most simplest one is there's something called yoga nidra, or you can just do meditation or mindfulness or gratitude, whatever works best for you. But there is something, you know, those weighted blankets about clearing your mind and relaxing and letting your body do this sleep thing. Yeah. And when you let that conscious mind go and you just let your body do the sleep, it actually does know how to sleep.
Right. And we didn't even talk about the coronavirus.
Rick, we
didn't even talk about it in the intro.
I think we're all kind of tired of talking.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that it may be coroned out at this point.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Where can people find you? Tell people about the Chili Pad, websites, all that good stuff.
Yes. So actually, I can do a quick coronavirus thing because we are doing a 1-for-1 right now. We actually have had over 2,000 applicants since we started less than a week ago. But we are, if you buy a dual zone, we are giving one to a healthcare worker, and we've already shipped some out.
Oh, wow.
So that's really a fun promotion that we're doing. I don't usually go very promotional, but the stories that are coming back have just how changing someone's sleep that isn't getting much sleep is sort of crashing in a recovery room at a hospital and just being able to get really good sleep.
Is that chilitechnology.com?
Chilitechnology.com. And you can find Ula there, and the Pillow Talk is the blog. You can reach me there. I'm also on Instagram as The Sleep Geek.
The Sleep Geek? T-H-E?
The Sleep Geek with underscore in between the sleep and
okay,
geek.
I'm with you. Okay. And we didn't even talk about your presidents, all the presidents and all that. We didn't even get into any of that. She's worked with past presidents. Remember in the intro, Rick? We did a whole presidents talk.
We were going to like talk to, like, ambush her about it like you
did me. Oh, I know. All of the MVPs. I could go on and on. Yeah. I will summarize it to say we've had Olympic teams, women's Olympic cycling team, other Olympic athletes, professional athletes on every professional sport. Sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied. Yeah. Too late at night, past my bedtime.
Yes.
And past presidents, royalty, the list of celebrities is enormous. It's kind of fun and geeky in a whole other podcast topic.
Probably. Yeah, right. Okay, and then finally, what is something that you enjoy about life or something you do to make life more enjoyable?
Ooh, I have four boys.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
It's going to sound really crazy to anyone that doesn't appreciate just boy energy, but I love cuddling with all of them. They're 21 to 11, and they'll very rarely are they all home. Well, right now they're all home.
Yeah.
But they will all climb in bed, and it usually lasts for about 2 minutes, and they all start wrestling.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that would be the chaos part, but that's my favorite thing of like just that raw boy energy in our house is my favorite thing in the
yeah.
world.
Well, I'm one of three boys. My poor mother.
I'm a big fan of the for sure.
Okay. Okay. I mean, deleting that.
Because you're one of three boys growing up. You just said it.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, Tara, thank you so much. This is great. We are out of time. I will email, now I can't even remember whoever it was that set it up for us, and get you the show link and all that when it goes up. It'll probably be a week or two before it goes up. But keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great stuff, and really happy to have you on.
Great. Thank you for having me. Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
You're listening to the Simply Human Podcast.
All right, that was great.
It was good.
Sleep. Back to the basics.
You texted me in the middle of this. You're like, hey, you have any questions? I'm like, no, I'm not busy listening. To what you-
I'm like taking notes. Yeah, this is good. All right, well, let's wrap the show up because we're at 50 minutes. The tip of the week is this. Take out a piece of paper and write someone, like not a note, not like a birthday card or a thank you note, write someone a letter.
Okay. So I saw the other day on Facebook, you said someone was commenting on one of your pictures and you're like, hey, I wrote you a letter. I was really bored. Like, what does your letter say? Like, dear Dave, hey, how are you? I am like in the day of like constant instantaneous communication, it's a lot different than like writing letters. Like, what do you write in there?
Okay. I'm going to send you someone who Simple Humans own Zeb received one such letter. I've written like 30 of them. I'm going to send it to you. And if you want to read it out loud, you may. Yeah, it's safe because I'm writing this down. Like, their kids might pick it up, so they're safe. You know what I mean? So I want you to describe this letter that I just sent you.
First of all, it's handwritten. Second of all, it's I believe this is the proper formatting for a letter. You write the date on the top line, yes. And then his address underneath there.
Yes.
Like you learn your, in like
your brother Rob is getting one of these letters. I already sent it.
Dear sir, okay. Also, you wrote it in cursive, yeah. So I'm not going to be able to read this very well.
Okay, just
as you know, I'm a man of honor and principle. Because of that, I've decided to write you a formal letter, like something
men.
Like men like me used to write in olden days. sorry, I have COVID. I have on belt buckle shoes and a George Washington wig. You will be sad to hear, as you'll be. You'll be sad to learn that sweet Aunt God, this is such a... If you sent me a letter like this, this would be such a kick in the ass to read this.
I did not send you one.
Aunt Molly and Cousin Buford have come down with a sickness. Dr. Kensington believes it to be COVID, but it's nothing a good bleeding won't fix. As for the conflict with the Jansen gang, it is still unresolved, and I fear it will come down to a shootout. Please stay away when that time comes, since you are such a bad shot with Grandpappy's rifle. I am a total idiot. Very truly yours, Mark. I put that last line in there. Very truly yours, yeah. Mark.
Having a little fun with this.
Can't believe you wasted. How much is a stamp these days?
Like
39?
40 cents. I've looked up insults that we don't use anymore. That like old fashioned insults, and that's basically what your letter, the letter to Rob, is just calling him all these old fashioned names.
I'm sure he'll love to read this.
I bet he will. He will thank me.
Yeah.
So that's the tip of the week, is write someone a letter. It's fun. People like getting letters. Everyone that has gotten one has like reached out to me like, oh, I got your letter. This is great.
I was actually thinking about this the other day. I was watching. This is how much television I've watched. I was watching Doc Hollywood on
That's a great movie.
I have never seen it.
And, oh, man.
Part where like two hillbillies out there bring a letter from like their cousin, and they don't know how to read. And so he has to read it to them about how like right. the cow got sick.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Man, how much things have changed. Like, we don't write letters anymore. Yeah. Just an email.
I'm having a lot of fun writing letters.
Oh, I bet you are.
Yeah. And I'm like learning. I'm like freshening up my cursive. Cursive is fun.
Would you like to know how long it's been since I wrote in cursive?
Like since you learned it in fifth grade?
I don't have an answer for you. It's been that long. I can't. There's no possible way. Well, it'd be like Billy Madison trying to write Rizzuto.
Those are Z's. Hey, cursive, I hate all of you. He runs out. I say that all the time when like I'll say like I hate cursive and I hate all of you, and like nobody ever gets it.
No, yeah, there are a lot of jokes that I make like that yeah. People don't get. Because anyway, I work with a lot of people who are either way older or way younger than me.
Yeah. All right, Rick. I had to edit out four things on the show.
Don't edit out my political rambling.
Oh, I will. That will be gone. Yeah.
No, anyway, yeah. Don't edit that out.
Okay, it's I'll leave it. Okay, I'll leave it in.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, I believe that's going to do it. We're booked solid. I mean, what the heck else we got to do?
I was just about to say, like, yeah, we're booked solid. What the hell else?
I think our next, like, it is April 6th, and our next, like, Monday night off is, like, the end of May, like Memorial Day, I think. So
Memorial Day still exists.
Yeah, well, in someone's dreams. Hashtag.
What?
Fusion scientist. Dream. Sleep.
Yeah, I completely forgot about the president. I forgot how we got
looped into
when you
that
mentioned
that
in the interview at the end. I was like,
"What are you talking about?"
You're talking about presidents. Like, oh, that's right. All these presidents do this chili powder thing.
Yeah. Chili pad. Yeah. All right, that is going to do it. That is going to do it for this.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for this edition. For this edition of the Simp Human Podcast.
And remember,
he was squished. So until next time, enjoy yourself.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.